A very interesting Rashi about the fate of Bnei Korach. In the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, introducing the census, so the Torah begins by listing the families of Reuven, and while discussing Reuven, the children of Eliav was a son of Palu, so the son of Palu was Eliav, and one of Eliav's sons was Dasan, and one of Eliav's sons was Aviram. And of course, these were the famous Dasan and Aviram, the troublemakers throughout the biblical narrative, but the Torah in Pinchas describes in particular their criminal activity and their collaboration with Korach, and their tragic and untimely fate of being swallowed by the earth, along with Korach. So somehow Korach's tragedy is spotlighted in the census, beginning with the children of, or the great-grandchildren of, Reuven. While discussing Korach's fate, the Torah writes, Uvinei Korach lo mesu, they didn't die. This is the first we hear of a special fate for the children of Korach. The Torah doesn't tell us which children of Korach, doesn't tell us why they didn't die, and it doesn't tell us where they went. Rashi, here in Parshas Pinchas, fills in two blanks. Number one, during the Machlokas, at some point, Rashi writes, Hir haru tshuva belibam. At some point, they had a flash. Interestingly enough, Rashi does not say that they performed a comprehensive tshuva. They had a mental flash of tshuva. Lefikach nisbatzer lohem makom gavoa begehenom v'yashvusham. A very interesting language. Rashi is lifting it from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis. A space near Gehenom, a high platform, nisbatzer, arei mivtzar, could be a city that's fortified, possibly an Ir Miklat, so the term nisbatzer, which Rashi lifts from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, may connote a refuge for someone who may have been condemned to death. Nisbatzer lehem makom gavah b'gehenom v'yashvusham. And they remained in that location. So Rashi describes a tshuva, and Rashi describes a rescue, perhaps at the last minute, as they're hurtling down towards Gehenom, a shaft or a little platform forms in the abyss, and they remain in that location. Rashi isn't too forthcoming about the terms of their tshuva, what instigated the tshuva, when they performed tshuva. There are various midrashim which describe the actual tshuva as initiating on their way into their descent into hell, into Gehenom. And that perhaps is why their tshuva was only a hirhur, because speaking would have been too dangerous as the fumes or the flames of Gehenom were raging. All they could manage was a flash or thought of tshuva, hirhur tshuva, rather than a complete tshuva. But of course, this is a very important statement about tshuva, even in its incomplete forms, even in its lackadaisical forms. The Gemara in Kiddushin talks about someone who marries a woman on the condition that he's a tzaddik. If that condition isn't true, the marriage is faulty. The Gemara says, even if we know him to be a classic Russia, an evildoer or a criminal, a religious criminal, the marriage is legal, even though his conduct reflects criminal activity. Perhaps at that moment, Shema hear her tshuva belibo. Perhaps at the moment he married the woman, even though he didn't undergo an entire comprehensive process of tshuva, perhaps he had thoughts of tshuva, and that would render him a tzaddik, not a rasha, and hence validate the marriage. So it's a very important medrash, it's a very important gemara, of hirhur tshuva, even though full-throated, comprehensive tshuva has to be sincere, and a process, and verbalized, and despite that goal, tshuva is important and valuable in any variety, and in any fashion. Now Rashi speaks about Hirhor Tshuva, and again the Midrashim I quote, a very popular Midrashim, about a very dramatic Midrashim, about a quick Tshuva on their way down. But there's an interesting Midrash which describes at least the origin of their Tshuva at an earlier stage. When Moshe comes to visit Korach to try to dissuade him from this insurrection, the Medrash describes Korach's children as being torn. On the one hand, if they stand for Moshe, it will be disrespectful to their father Korach. And they are commanded in the mitzvah of Kabed es Avicha v'yesimecha. However, if they don't stand for Moshe, they'll violate the mitzvah to honor Talmid Chachamim b'bnei Seva Takum. So they were torn about whom to show honor to, and they decided, Mutav Shenamod b'bnei Moshe Rabbeinu, af al pi shanu noagim b'zayon b'avinu. It's better for us to stand for Moshe and to insult our father than to respect our father and his insurrection and stand for Moshe. And at that point, somehow, the futility of this encounter became crystallized to them, that it was Moshe's honor versus Korach's honor, and that is what we would call a no-brainer. And at that point, the Medrash says, they began to consider at least the potential for tshuva. Now, what's interesting about this Medrash is, and Rashi doesn't quote it, is that even though morally and religiously they had gone adrift, and they had started and launched this rebellion against Moshe, something so basic and instinctive and kind as honoring both parents and older people, in this case it's not clear whether they felt the need to honor Moshe because he was older, because he was a tzaddik, perhaps both, but just the ability to show basic respect to human beings is something which restores their virtue and allows them to return from the precipice of disaster literally and to rescue their souls for eternity. And it shows how important respecting people is, and how sometimes we see these traits of respecting others, even in people whose general religious behavior isn't stellar, and sadly vice versa. We find people who excel in ritual, Torah study, and other areas of religious experience, but somehow don't have basic decency and respect. And this is a Medrash which describes, by hyperbole, the importance of respect even in sinners. It shows us the restorative power of respecting, in this case, their father, and respecting Moshe. So Rashi describes the tshuva of the children of Korach. Doesn't tell us where the tshuva took place. Many midrashim fill in the blanks. The tshuva took place on the way down to Gehenim. They couldn't speak, they could only think. This impartial tshuva is still valuable. Now what's interesting about Rashi is it sounds like they actually remained underground. Rashi concludes the description, very graphic description, with a space being secured for them on a high place in Gehenom, v'yashvu sham, and they remain there. Now the problem with this account is twofold. First of all, when the B'nai Levi are listed, even in Parshas Pinchas, one of the families is Mishpachas HaKarchi, the family of Korach. If all of Korach's children were eliminated from the terrestrial sphere, many of them were living underground near Gehenom, how could they be counted in the census? Equally interesting is the fact that we have many Prakim and Tehillim that are crafted by B'nai Korach, Lam Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor. There are many different accounts in several Midrashim that the children of Korach, once they were spared Gehenom, they actually alighted and ascended to the earth and continued to live normal lives, and not only lived normal lives, but wrote some very important Prakim and Tehillim, most significantly, Perek Membeis, Lam Natzeach, Livnei Korach Mizmor, Kayal Tarog Alafike Mayim, Ke Nafshi Tarog Elecha Elokim, which according to the Medrash describes a tshuva, or at least a tefila, during a moment of crisis, and one can't imagine a crisis more acute than about to plunge into Gehenom. Perek Memhe, Lamanatzeach El Shoshanim, Livnei Korach Maskil Shir Yedidos, a perek lesser known, but a perek about Shoshanim. Chazal, very interesting medrash, describe this as a gloss to the plight of the Jewish people. Shoshana, the Jews are compared to a Shoshana, to a rose, to a Shoshana. And Bnei Korach are likening the Jewish plight to Shoshana, that even though you're rooted sometimes under the ground, in the lowest nadir, in the lowest space, nationally and historically, you'll once again rise and flower, and the Geula will come. And at least according to one version, Bnei Korach cited a pasuk, "Ehyeh katali Yisrael yifrach kashoshana," that sometimes the Shoshana is submerged underground, is suppressed and persecuted, but one day it will rise and Hashem will choreograph that rise. And Bnei Korach saw their own plight as a metaphor for the Jewish national experience, that even though they can descend to the lowest depths, Hashem still retains interest and Hashem still protects them. And of course, the very famous Perek Mem Hei, which we recite 7 times before Tkiyat Shofar, Lam Natzech Levnei Korach Mizmar, Kol Amim Tikucha, Faru Lelekim B'kol Rina, a very famous Perek, because it's included in such an important part of our davening. Now it is possible, in theory, being that this entire event is supernatural, it is possible that they compose this Shira underground, and somehow those words were recorded and presented, perhaps through supernatural transmission, to an above-ground recorder, to an above-ground person that wrote them down. But the simple reading is that they ascended and lived regular, natural lives, and within that ascent, they said Shira, or at the very least, it sounds this way from a Rashi in Tehillim Perek Mem Beis. In that Rashi, on the first pasuk, Rashi lists the names of these 3 children of Korach. One was named Asir, one was Elkanah, one was Aviasaph. And it sounds like, in Rashi, they actually recited these Perekim in Tehillim at the gates of Gehenna, at the gates of hell, and then they ascended, which would cast Shira as part of their restoration, part of their regeneration. It wasn't just the tshuva, but the ability to sing and to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents, perhaps, a vital condition for their restoration and for their ascent. Or perhaps their tshuva allows them to escape the furnace of perfidy of Gehenna, but it's the Shira which restores an innocence and which restores an original nativity that allows them to ascend the earth. Of course, the central Gemara of this whole controversy, did they ascend or not, is a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Yud Amin Aleph, which describes a story, also appears in Bava Basra Ayin Dalet, of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, who's walking along the road and he meets an Arab, and the Arab tells him, I'll show you where Korach's buried, Bluei de Korach, and he shows him 2 little holes in the ground through which steam is arising, and he asks him to listen into those 2 holes, and they hear together, Moshe Emes V'Sara, so Emes V'Heim Badaim, and Korach's crew are charlatans. And this Arab tells him that all 30 days, this experience repeats itself 30 days. Now, Korach's band presumably died. If they died, they wouldn't be reciting Moshe Emes V'Sara So Emes. So it sounds as if these voices are the voices of Korach's children, trapped beneath the surface, but still alive, and acknowledging their guilt and their folly, and verifying Moshe Rabbeinu. On the other hand, the Gemara talks about these sounds as emitting from Beluei de Korach. So it could be that some members of Korach's band were spared, and they are the ones who are reciting Moshe Emes V'Sara So Emes, while Korach's actual children, in part because of their tshuva, in part because of their shira, ascend, write Prakim of Tehillim, and of course Be'er Shmuel, who is a descendant of Korach. So it's an interesting Rashi. It's not clear whether they remain submerged or whether they ascend. The Prakim and Tehillim which they craft become important Prakim as metaphors for the Jewish experience, and ultimately as descriptions of the power of tefillah, specifically during a time of crisis. There's another interesting medrash which describes them witnessing the gates of Yerushalayim being buried during the first Beis HaMikdash. She tells us in Kiddushin, quotes this. And as they witnessed the gates of Yerushalayim or the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed and being buried, to a degree they're gratified, because now that the gates have been buried alongside of the children of Korach, they're more certain of their ultimate redemption, because now Hashem has to locate, so to speak, those gates and has to excavate them from the abyss. And when he excavates those gates, he'll excavate the children of Korach as well. That sounds like they remain underground. It tells us in Kiddushin, Laman Aleph Amud Beis. Shabbat Shalom.